Welcome back to the Parsha Podcast. Here we are. It's Yom Shlishi. It is the Aliyah Shlishis, and we're in Parshas Mishpatim. We're going to be revisiting some of our old friends from Bava Kamma again. Here we are. Ki Yavar Ish Sadeh Ocherem V'Shilach Es Be'iro V'Bir V'Steh Acher Metav Sadeh U'Metav Karmo Yishalem. If a man will feed his animals in a field, and then he lets them go, and they feed in somebody else's field, he must pay back from the best of his field or vineyard. Rashi says the word Bezayin Resh is a lashon of an animal, and one is the verb of the animal, and the other one is the noun of the animal. Biro is the noun of the animal. Yavair is the verb of the animal eating. Clarifies, Yavair means that you're bringing your animal to a field or to a vineyard of someone else. He then quotes the Gemara saying that Shiloach Be'er, the sending of the animal, refers to how the animal walks and tramples on things, versus Be'er is the animal's eating. Doesn't mean the best of the field. I'm sure you might remember this also from Bava Kamma, that we evaluate what the damage is, and it must be paid back with the best of your fields, not with the worst of your fields. Moving on to another category of damage, ki seitzei esh u'matza kotzim v'nechal godish o hakama o hasade shalem yishalem hamavir es habeira. And if there will be fire that comes about and it finds thorns, and then as a result it consumes a haystack or standing growing grain, for the field he surely will pay the one who lights the fire. Rashi says, ki seitzayesh, even if it goes by itself, and it consumes this haystack, the stack of grain, this means that it then catches on the thorns, which then carry it to something of much more worth, and then to something which is even connected still to the ground. But the field, which it needs to catch it on fire a second time, though he lit the fire in his own backyard, in his own campfire ground, whatever, wherever you keep your fire, but you didn't guard your coals properly, and as a result it spread, therefore he has to pay. Moving on again, now, from Bava Kamma to Bava Metzia, to the four showmen, where you give someone something to guard, and all types of misadventures happen. Ki yiten ish al re'ehu kesef o chelim l'shmura v'gunav mibeis ha'ish, imi imatzeh ha'ganav yishalem shnayim. If a man will give to his fellow money or vessels to guard, and they are stolen from his house, if you find the thief, he shall surely pay. And it is stolen, Rashi says, lefi dvarav, putting in quotation marks, based on the claim of the person who was holding the item. Thief will pay the owner of the object, Rashi says. Im lo yimatzah haganav v'nikrav bal habayis al Elohim, v'im lo shalach yado b'melechas re'ehu. If the ganav is not found, he will be brought, the owner of the house, to the judge, if he did not cast his hand in the work of his fellow. Rashi says that the person who's entrusted the object, maybe he's a guard, the guardian of the object, is the one who's called the Baal HaBayis, because the previous pasuk referred to him as the one who stores his fellow's item in his house. So he's the one who has the house. Then Rashi continues, then he comes to the judge, who's called the Elohim, and he has to swear he didn't take the item of his fellow. Al kol davar pesha, al shura, al chamur, al seh, al salma, al kol aveda asher yomar ki hu zeh ad ha-Elohim yavoa dvar shnehem, asher yirishu al-Elohim yishalem shnehem yilorehu. On any matter of negligence, on an ox or on a donkey, on a sheep or on clothing, regarding any lost object, that he will say that regarding it, they will be brought to the judges by the both of them, and whoever the judge determines is the wicked one, he will pay double to his fellow. Rashi says, what does it mean, pesha? As I translated as negligent. He says, as somebody who has been found to be lying in his oath, that the witnesses will come and say that, no, you stole it. And then the judges will designate him as the wicked person in accordance with the witnesses. Rashi says that this is to tell us that when a person has an item which has been given to him for safekeeping, and then he claims it was stolen, but then it comes out that he was stolen after being made to swear, then he must be paid double. Rashi says that the word, and they will be brought close to the judge, the brought close is the swear, but also he says it can imply that it also means to be brought to the judges to determine the case. The matter will come before both of them. This means that the judges will cross-examine the witnesses, and if they are kosher, they will say who is the rasha in this case. And if it turns out that the witnesses are actually the rishayim, then in that case, then they will have to pay double to the person who they are trying to convict. Rashi also brings up the ki huzeh aspect, teaches you that we are only mechayev a shvua, for we only obligate somebody to swear if they admits to some of the claim, but they don't admit to any of the claim, so then they will not be forced to swear. So to speak, I owe you 20, you're claiming I owe you 100, I'm telling you I owe you 20, and the rest was stolen from me, so in a case like that, that's when he would have to swear, according to Rashi. We're now going to begin another pasuk, which seems to be talking about something very, very similar, and Rashi distinguishes the previous pasukim. We're talking about a shomer chinam, somebody who guards voluntarily, and the next pasuk is going to deal with somebody who has been paid to guard. Ki yiten isha el riehu chamor or shor o seh v'chol behem l'shmor umes o nishbar o nishva ein roeh. And if it will happen that a person will give to their fellow a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any animal to guard, and it dies or is broken or is captured, and none see. Rashi says the previous section was talking about the Shomer Chinam, and therefore he is absolved if it was stolen. All he has to do is make an oath, is to swear. However, this parsha is talking about somebody who is a rented guard. Therefore, he must pay unless there is some onus that is out of his hands, like it dies, or some bandits come and capture it or break it, and there's no aid to testify to this entire thing. Shuvos Hashem tia ben shnehem imu lo shalach yadu b'melechus reyehu v'lachach ba'alav v'lo yushalem. There will be an oath of Hashem between the two of them if he did not cast his hand against the work of his fellow, and the owner will not pay. Rashi says this is to say that you will swear that this is what happened and he did not try to use it at all, and therefore it was his onus. He was powerless in the matter. He was not negligent, and therefore he is not going to be obligated in a case of onus, in a place where he was powerless to do anything. But if he did use it at all, then he is culpable, even if afterwards the bandits came and broke it, stole it, or killed it. And the guard will swear, and then he will not have to pay anything. V'im tarof yitaref yaviu ed trefa lo yishalem. And if it was attacked by a wild animal, and he brings edim, witnesses, to the matter, then he does not have to pay. Rashi explains that the fact that it says the trefa, ha trefa, you will not pay, is to distinguish that there are some that he does have to pay and some that he doesn't have to pay. That the trefa of a cat, a weasel, smaller animals that attacked the item, then you would have to pay. But larger animals, a wolf, a lion, a bear, those you're kind of powerless against. But little animals, you could probably drive them off. V'chi yishal ish mi'im rehuv nishbar omeis balav en imo shalom yishalem. And if someone borrows something from his fellow, and it is broken or dies, and the masters of it are not with it, then he must surely pay. Rashi explains that this is the third of the Shomrim. This is referring to a borrower. He is obligated to pay in a case of anus. And if the owners of the ox that he's borrowing in front of them are not present, that's when he will have to pay.
And if the owners are with him, he does not have to pay. If it is rented, and he comes with the money. Rashi says, if they were with him when he went and borrowed it, even if they weren't with him at the time when it broke, then he also does not have to pay. But if it isn't borrowed, rather it's rented, Rashi says, a renter does not have the obligation to pay on things that are out of his power, an onus. So we're not sure, is a renter like a paid watchman, or is he like a person doing a favor of watching? Chachamim, not sure. There's a machlokus. Rabbi Meir says that he's like a shomer chinam, somebody who elects to guard as a favor. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, he's like a paid watchman. Changing gears, now we move over to the parsha of seduction and rape. V'chi yifate ish besula asher lo orasa v'shachav imah. Mohar yimharena lo leisha. And if a man will seduce a unwed woman that is not engaged, halachically engaged, that erusin did not take place, and he sleeps with her, then he must give her the value of a kesuva of a married woman. Rashi explains the word yifate means to speak to her, to seduce her until she concedes. And he must give her that the amount of money for sustenance as a wife, as she might be stigmatized in finding a husband after this, and as a result, he has caused her to lose the value of what a ksuva would be, which is the money guaranteeing her support and being taken care of in terms of sustenance for a year, and as such, he has caused her a loss, specifically relevant at a time when women did not necessarily work outside the home. Even relevant today, you know, it's a different halachic discussion. V'im ma'in yima'in avia lisata lo kesef yishkol kimohar besulos. And if her father will not allow her to marry this man, then he must give her the full money of a besulos ksuva. This would be 50 silver pieces. And the same amount as a victim of a rape in terms of the part of the restitution he would have to do monetarily besides the spiritual restitution one would have to do. Machashefa lo sechaya. You shall not allow a sorceress to live. Rashi says that one does not take the law into one's own hands. They have to go through a Beis Din procedure. It doesn't mean a person's allowed to kill anybody, but that they would have to be brought to Beis Din to prove. He furthermore explains that whether women or men, a wizard or a witch, either of them is prohibited. However, it seemed at that time that you had many more witches than wizards. Kol ashochev im behema mos yumas. Anyone who lies with an animal shall surely die. Rashi says that we see later on in Vayikra that it says damehem bam, which indicates a penalty of skila. Zoveach lohim yachoram bli lahashem levado. Anyone who makes a korban towards a god besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be excommunicated. Only to Hashem it is permissible. Only Hashem alone. Rashi is discussing whether or not the word of Elohim, is it Elohim or Elohim? Is it Hashem Kodesh? Is it Hashem Chol? Is it a Shem Yodua? Does it mean a the foreign gods, any foreign gods? Rashi examines all of the different possibilities because of the grammar. The lamed with the comments at the beginning with it could imply a direct one. You're not allowed to be zoveach mecha korban to a specific foreign god or any foreign god, or maybe even some type of element of holy elevated one like malachim. So Rashi goes through all the different options. Doesn't mean any of the known foreign gods, like the Baal, like the Komesh, like a Molech, or it doesn't mean any foreign gods, like the little gods of the hills and the rivers and the cities, or to a foreign king, or does it even mean to divine beings like Malachim? Regardless, that it is all Aser. Rashi also says that even though we're speaking about a korban, not just a korban, he says, even nesachim, even wine libations, or burning incense, or bowing, any of them, zovech here includes any avoda, any method of serving of these gods, even if it's not a traditional korban or a traditional methodology in the Beis HaMikdash that we would use, lahavdil, whether it's a pouring of a wine or the smoking of incense, all of this is forbidden. Or anything else that this particular idolatry would be using. V'ger lo sone v'loz silchatsenu ki gerim ha'isim be'eretz Mitzrayim. And you shall not oppress the stranger because you are strangers in the land of Mitzrayim. Rashi says, what does this mean to oppress? To oppress means onus devarim, to say, remember that you, the actions that you did when you were a non-Jew, that you ate non-kosher and that you served foreign gods, etc. You should not be lochetz on him, means you shouldn't steal his money. And then Rashi comments, because you were strangers in Mitzrayim, is to tell you that he can turn around and do the same thing to you. You also came from strangers and from converts. Do not accuse your fellow of your own mum, of your own psul. And Rashi also gives us a rule that anytime we use the word ger, refers to a person who was not born in that country and then came to that country to live there. Kol almana v'yasam lo sa'anun. Any widow and orphan you shall not oppress. Truth is, Rashi says, you shouldn't oppress anyone, but especially not them, and the Pasuk is speaking to them because they are weak. V'im anesa neoso, ki im tsaok itzak elai, shamoa eshma tsaakaso. And if you oppress them, if they cry out to me, I will surely listen to their cry. Rashi notes that if somebody does hear their cry and doesn't do anything, so the punishment is worse. And Rashi says that if you do, you will get yours in the end also. V'chara pi v'haragti eschem b'chorev v'hayu neshechem almanos u'b'neichem yisomim. And my anger will flare against you. I will kill you by the sword, and your wives will be widows and your children orphans. Rashi says, well, that's clearly what happens when somebody dies. So what's the end of the pasuk coming to tell us? That they will be widows in the worst type of way, that there's no witness to your death, so that they cannot remarry, and the children will suffer in the way that they will not be able to access any of their father's inheritance, so they'll even be more orphaned. Im kesef talve es ami es ha'ani imach lo sihielo enoshe lo sesimun alav neshech. If you will lend my nation money, the poor amongst you shall not be as a creditor. Do not lend to him with interest. Rashi quotes Rabbi Yishmael, who says that any im in the Torah is a rishus, is optional, meaning it's your option to, except for in three places. And this is one of them, that no, you must lend my nation money. And it must be a poor person taking precedence over rich people, specifically the poor of your city, over the poor of another city. And as the Pasuk says, my nation, you shall not look down on them in doing so. Rather, that we are brothers, and that this is how you should treat each other, like brothers. Don't be like a creditor. Do not come after him strongly. And if you know that he doesn't have the ability to pay you back, do not come and embarrass him because you know that he can't pay you back yet. Then Rashi comments the word interest. Interest is the word neshech, even though normally we use the word ribis, but neshech is also why, because it's like a snake bite, it says. It's a little prick that doesn't seem to be a major wound, but at the same time, then the poison goes in and becomes a bigger and bigger problem. The same way, interest starts out a little and then accrues and becomes greater and greater. That's why it's called like a snake bite. Im chavol tachbol. Salmas Riyacha ad bo hashemesh tishivenu lo. And Rashi explains the word, if you will go and take a collateral, even though the word used is if you take a person's soul garment as collateral, you must return it to him as the sun comes. Why does it say taken as a collateral twice? Because every day your soul returns to me, Hashem says, and every day it has to give judgment and is obligated. I return it to you as well. So the same thing, you shall
take and return, take and return. The same way that you take it as collateral and return it, so too I do with your soul, and therefore you shall do this to this poor person as well. Rashi actually says that it's that Rashi explains, what does it say as the sun comes? The sun comes to tell you that if they have a piece of clothing and you use it during the day, so you, the guy should wear it all day and then give it to you at night, and then you return it to him the next morning as the sun comes, making Rashi's mashal even more powerful, saying that just like you return your soul to me every night, so too we return the clothing every night and comes back. Ki hi kisuso levada hi simwaso leoro v'ma yishkav v'haya ki yitzak elai v'shamati ki chanun ani. This is because it is his soul garment, and it is his clothing for his skin. In what will he sleep? And he will call out to me, and I will hear him, because I am merciful. This is his soul garment. Why is it repeated twice? Whether we're speaking about a kisuso is his covering, which means the outer garment, and simwaso leoro means like the undergarment, either which one of these, or bama yishkav, it refers to something that he would sleep in or on, and these would be returned to the creditor in the morning, and he would get it back at night, so he would sleep in his own bed garments or couch coverings during the night, and then return them to the creditor, and then take his day garments for the day, and then return them again.